Welcome back to Brain Biohacking with your host, Kayla Barnes. We dive into all things optimal health, optimal brain health, nutrition, peak performance, cognitive excellence, biohacking, longevity, and so much more.
But the breathing is going to lead you to a place of calm, and it's going to transform how your body is responding to your physical environment. And that's why it's so powerful and popular.
James, it's such a pleasure to have you here with me today.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Absolutely. So today we are going to be talking about one of my favorite topics, but I'm so excited to learn more from, you know, someone with such expertise, but we're going to be talking about breathing.
Good. My favorite subject too. Look at that. What a coincidence.
It is a coincidence. So let's start at the beginning. How did you get so interested in breathing?
I am a journalist. I've been a science journalist for a long time, for decades, and I never set out to write a book about breathing. But it wasn't until I kept having personal experiences, I kept having professional experiences, I talked with freedivers, I talked with meditators, and it just seemed like there was a larger story here that hadn't been told. And so for several years, I dug around, thought I had a book idea, was mocked by my agent and my friends for thinking there might be a book about breathing. But eventually, after years and years, I thought I had enough real science behind it to pursue it. And that's what I did. And that was a long time ago. This book took a long time. So that's my circuitous route into respiratory research.
I love it. So how long did the book take to write?
Too long. It's hard to give an exact amount of time. The reason is, it's because I was casually researching this stuff for years and years before I got the book contract to actually go out and spend another 4.5 to 5 years researching. So I had to keep rewriting it because I kept finding stuff that didn't make sense that I had never heard of. And then I talked to doctors and they would tell me it's all BS. And then I talked to other doctors and they said it was all legit. So there's no consensus about most things in medicine, and especially about breathing.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. But what's amazing is it's something that we do so often, yet, I mean, I would say until recently, and I'm sure your book sparked this, but we don't think much about it.
Well, we shouldn't. And that's what's great about being human, having such an advanced brain. Other animals don't think about it either, except for dolphins. They have to think about every single breath they take. But what a bummer it would be to think about breathing 20,000 times a day, 25,000 times a day. We've evolved to just have this run in the background. But the problem is that many of us have such poor breathing habits that that background program is faulty. And through our poor breathing, so many other problems can arise. And this is what we've been finding throughout the world, you know, for decades and decades.
Absolutely. Well, that's a great place to start. So what are we doing wrong? What are most people doing wrong when it comes to breathing? And what might that be leading to?
So basically, I think the vast, vast majority of people, more than 90%, are doing everything wrong when it comes to breathing. And we can get by breathing improperly, right? You can still run a marathon. You can work out. You can sleep. You can get by in the day and focus on your work, but you're not doing that optimally. You're doing it in a very inefficient way. And when you're doing something so inefficiently, other parts of the body, other resources have to be tapped. So we're able to squeak by in our health with respiration that's faulty, but we're not able to thrive. And so specifically, the bullet points of what we're doing incorrectly are where most of us are breathing through our mouths. The vast majority of us are breathing through our mouths when we sleep. We know that both of those things are so damaging to our health, to our ability to think, to periodontal disease, to respiratory infection, and more. Most of us breathe way too much, far more than we need to breathe. And most of us don't know how to take a proper deep breath. And a lot of what has been taught in yoga classes is just wrong. And so once you spend years and years exploring this, you realize that we've gotten almost everything wrong about breathing, and we need to return to our natural state, which is what all the other animals do. They don't need breathing therapists. They don't need biohacking. They're perfect in their natural condition, and that's what humans need to do as well.
That's a great point. I would love to discuss a little bit further. So when we're mouth breathing, especially at night, what exactly, how does that lead to things like issues with our gums or different conditions? Mm-hmm. Can you just give us a little bit of color on that?
About 65% of the population breathes through their mouths when they're sleeping. When we breathe through our mouth when we're sleeping, we're much more apt to suffer from snoring. It influences sleep apnea as well. We are changing the pH in our mouth, making it much more acidic, which makes it a breeding ground for bacteria, which leads to cavities. I've heard from several dentists that the number one cause of cavities, more than sugar, more than whatever food you're eating, is mouth breathing. And when you're doing that all night, it's going to destroy your dental health. And we've known this for more than 100 years. There's articles dating back more than 100 years stating this exact thing. Beyond that, the way that the sleeping brain resets itself, the way that it efficiently purges lymph fluid and purges all that CSF in the brain, is through this rhythm. And this rhythm is set by our respiration. So it's that very easy cyclical rhythm, in and out slowly like a wheel, that our body uses to perform all of these actions. When you're breathing through the mouth, you're much more apt to choke, struggle to breathe, and that rhythm is lost. So all of these systems fall apart. And again, you can survive like this for a while, but eventually it'll catch up to you. And there's direct links between problems breathing and diabetes and heart disease and stroke. Because of course there are. Because if your body is not operating efficiently when it's supposed to be restoring itself, you're going to pay the price. And we have been.
Yeah, that's so interesting. So if there was a right way to breathe, I think a lot of people are breathing through their mouth, but also it tends to be very shallow breathing. But you say the yoga practice, because in yoga, they always say, you know, fill your belly with air and then exhale out. What would the better option be if someone really wanted to focus on this for maybe a week or, you know, 20 days to start to reset their breathing? What would be a better option for them to do?
So first, let's talk about that shallow breathing. So when you breathe through your mouth, you're much more apt to breathe much more shallow, right? And when you sleep on your back, as most people do when they're sleeping, when you breathe, most of the expansion is happening in your back, not in your front. It's happening in your back. So if you're mouth breathing and you're sleeping on your back, you're breathing very shallow. And here's the problem with breathing very shallow and breathing through the mouth, is that most of that air gets stuck in our mouths and our bronchi and our throats, but it never makes it to our lungs where it participates in gas exchange. So all of that air that you're taking in is just exhaled without ever being used, which means you need to be breathing more and more and more just to get proper amounts of oxygen into your bloodstream. So that's the problem with breathing shallow. When we tend to breathe through our noses, we tend to breathe much more deeper and much more fuller. And we know we breathe much more slowly. And that slow, rich, deeper breath allows us to extract way more oxygen than we would be able to if we're breathing these shallow breaths through our mouth. The second part of what you were mentioning is, you know, for an instructional and just how to breathe deep. Most of the yoga classes that I've gone to have focused on something called belly breathing. They said, breathe in, I want to see your belly come out. Breathe out, your belly will come back in. I can hold my breath right now and move my belly in and out. Okay? I'm not even breathing and I'm doing that. So that is poor instruction. What you should be doing is focusing on your sides, okay? You can take your hands like this, put them up above your hip bones here. And when you breathe in, your hands should be going out laterally. Okay. I don't care what your stomach's doing. Those are different muscles. But if your hands are going out laterally, that means your diaphragm is pushing down and you're taking a full breath. And that is how to test yourself, how well you're breathing, how deep you're breathing. So there are a zillion different techniques for diaphragmatic breathing. I don't care which one you use. They all focus on the same thing, to breathe deeper, to breathe slower, and to let that whole area down here in your abdomen, not just the stomach, expand out like a balloon and come back in.
That's super helpful. I wanted to do it along with you, but I think that's great. So can we talk a little bit about why do we breathe through our nose in the first place? You know, there has to be a reason that we're supposed to breathe through the nose. There's all sorts of anatomy within the nose. Nitric oxide, I've heard, plays a role in this. So can you talk a little bit about why, what happens to our bodies when we breathe through our nose?
Well, if you were to cut a human skull in half, and I've seen pictures of this, and I've seen my own self cut in half with a CBCT scan, what you're going to see is this huge amount of space at the front of the face. All of this space here is there for a reason. We evolved this for a reason. Nature does nothing in vain, right? It doesn't do things inefficiently. So we evolved this because we are designed to be breathing in and out of our noses. And if you look at other animals in the wild, even animals in a zoo, the vast majority of their breaths is in and out through their noses. Look at a racehorse, look at a cheetah, even when it's sprinting at 60 miles per hour. They're breathing in and out of our noses, and we're designed to do the same thing. This is our physiology. This is how we have evolved to exist, to breathe in and out of our noses. So that doesn't mean we can't breathe through our mouths. We can. And what a great thing to have a backup system. You get clubbed in the face, something happens with your nose. You can still breathe through your mouth, but that is only a backup system, right? That is secondary. You're supposed to be eating and drinking with your mouth and breathing through your nose. So there are innumerable reasons for this. Nitric oxide is just one of them. Nitric oxide is getting a lot of press lately, which is great. People need to pay attention to it. So breathing through your nose is going to increase your nitric oxide sixfold. And if you hum, that increases it 15-fold over just regular nasal breathing. So nitric oxide is a vasodilator. Nitric oxide is essential for the delivery of oxygen. It's also the active ingredient in erectile dysfunction drugs. What they do when people take them is they make your body produce more nitric oxide. That's why those drugs do what they do. So we can produce our own nitric oxide by breathing through our nose or by humming. And I think, even though there's no science on this, my little hypothesis is, you know, when people are getting friendly with one another, when the action's about to start, what do? They start kissing, which means they're breathing through their nose, and they start umming and humming and making this vibration, which increases nitric oxide 15-fold. So maybe we've taught ourselves how to do this for some evolutionary reason.
Yeah, that's a really good thought there. I was wondering if there's any like trials or studies correlating people that take some of these nitric oxide boosting, if they just swapped it for breathing. I think that would be interesting. Most likely no studies, but.
No, absolutely. That will never, ever, ever happen. And the reason is because this nitric oxide boost you're getting from nasal breathing and from cold exposure and breath work will work just as good or probably way better than any of these drugs. And you can talk to thousands, millions of people this time that have adopted those two things, cold exposure and proper breathing and humming, who have said the same thing, that they were having trouble having babies for, you know, 7 years. They both got into doing that a few months later. There you go. You got twins. So, you know, but this is the problem with science is so much of it, you have to find funding. And the vast majority is funded by private interest. But there's just not a lot of public money for this kind of stuff. It'd be a great study. I would love to see the results. I have a feeling I already know what they're going to be.
No, yeah, I'm sure you're definitely right. So you bring up cold therapy. So do you like pairing cold therapy and breath work together? I have a cryo chamber here and I do cold therapy like 5 times a week. I always really try to focus on my breathing, but it sounds like there's tremendous benefit.
I can't stand cold therapy. I hate it. I hate the cold. I grew up in Southern California. I love the heat. I love warm oceans. I don't like cold oceans. However, the science is so clear. There are so many benefits from cold therapy, whether it's doing cryo, whether it's doing cold baths, whether it's doing cold showers, they're all doing basically the same thing. It's so good for inflammation, good for blood pressure. It's good for the nervous system and more. I'm trying to get better at it. I have PTSD from being in Iceland about 2 months ago and being convinced to go swim in the ocean there, that it would be good for me to walk across the snow in bare feet for 5 minutes and go, and it was awful. So I'm trying to wade back into it a little more on some friendlier terms, and we'll see what happens. So I am absolutely endorsing cold therapy. It's not something I do all the time. It's something I'm trying to get better at doing. But that combo of cold therapy and breath work, I think, is absolutely magic. And you can, there is science on that, what this can do for autoimmune diseases, depression, anxiety, whatever you've got. It seems like it can help improve your outcomes in some cases tremendously.
Yeah, I'm a big believer in cold therapy. It's definitely not the most enjoyable or desired part of my day, but I certainly get through it. But you, so in Iceland, and that sounds amazing, by the way, this is like on my bucket list. Is
terrible. It's awful. Don't do it. No, it's terrible. I'll go in summertime. No.
You should have jumped in the water. That's like, I want to do some
cold. I did.
You did? Okay.
I did.
You felt amazing after, right?
Yeah. No, I mean, there's all these freaking Vikings, right? They do this stuff every day and then they wash themselves off with like ground coffee. And I mean, these are like witches and Vikings and they're amazing. They said, "Your breath guy, come on, use your breathing, do this." I said, "Oh, absolutely. I'm 100% in." It was awful. It was a terrible experience. And I've been through a lot of crap, but this was awful. But to see these 8-year-old kids just swimming laps, you know, off the shore of Iceland. So they're on just another level of health and understanding the potential of the human body. But hopefully I'll get better at it. But I still have some issues with it.
Well, I'm sure you'll get over it. And I'm sure you probably had a ton of energy since it increases dopamine and gives you all that adrenaline. So you probably felt pretty good, even though you're upset.
Afterwards, yeah, I wasn't upset. Afterwards, you know, of course you feel good. But I didn't feel as good because they were out there for like 10, 15 minutes. What is wrong with me? So I think you have to, just like anything else, you have to work up to it. A lot of people, when they hear about breath work, say, cool, I signed up for this 2-hour breath work class. You know, we're going to hyperventilate for 45 minutes and hold our breath for 5 minutes. Don't do that. Start really slow. Just like with cold therapy, as I learned, start really slow and work up. So I'm working on the cold shower situation, which is fine. I can handle that. But the more advanced Iceland stuff, maybe next year.
Well, good. Maybe I'll be there too, because that's definitely something I want to do. So what breath work, like what was the practice while you were in the cold therapy? Because I always switch it up, but I would love to hear what you do.
So I've done cold baths before and I loved them. To me, the difference is if you're going from a warm environment into the cold temporarily and coming back into a warm environment, no problem. Anyone can withstand 2 minutes of being in a cold bath. Absolutely. And I really get a charge off of that. It's starting off cold and shivering and then going into a colder environment and losing it and then coming back out into a cold environment that I actually think is borderline dangerous unless you're built up to do that. And that's what they do out there. And it just wasn't my cup of tea. So I think small doses of this extreme stress of cold therapy is fantastic. I'm getting a cold plunge here in my backyard here in a few weeks. But with the breathing, I have learned, instead of doing the slow and low and deep. 4 seconds in, 6 seconds out. And that's really hard at the beginning when it takes your breath away. But once you can lock into that and you relax, you don't fight it, you completely relax, is when that pain becomes transformational. And that's the moment that I think everyone does cold exposure for, that transformational pain when you get over that hump after the first 40 seconds and you say, I can own this, I can do this. And man, you feel great afterwards.
Yeah. And I think that everyone, when you watch the videos, and I've done quite a few cold plunges myself, the first reaction is always just taking your breath away. But it's almost only your breath that can put you into a more relaxed state. You have to gain control over how you're breathing, or otherwise you're going to have a miserable experience for the whole time.
I think it's true with cold exposure. I also think that's true with a lot of sports, such as surfing. If you see someone out in the lineup and things are getting serious out there and they've lost their control of breathing, they're toast. I mean, they're not going to catch a wave. And if they catch one, they're going to wipe out. But they need to turn around and go back in. I've noticed whenever I've lost control of my breathing, I'm in way over my head. So I think that using that as a gain, push yourself to the limit to where you lose control of your breathing, then dial it back. Always stay in control, but it's fun to flirt with that line of right when you're really losing it. But from what I've heard from all the elite trainers, and I know a lot of these guys now, you never want to push yourself into those chronic states of respiratory dysfunction where you've just lost control of your breathing. You're not going to benefit from it athletically. You're going to be running anaerobically. You're going to be much more susceptible to injuries. So you can play with where that border is for you, but stay in control of your breath.
So how do we, let's just say we're on the verge or have lost control of the breath. It could be from cold therapy or maybe a big presentation, public speaking. What is the best steps? Like, what can we do? Is it a certain amount of breaths? Is it just slow, deep breaths? How long should we inhale? How long should we exhale? What's your favorite kind of route to regaining control or reducing anxiety in some way?
I think you can do a lot of things, and different things work for different people. Something that's going to work for an ultra marathoner is not going to work for an asthmatic, right? So you have to find what works best for you. I can tell you what works for me. What works for a lot of people is once I notice that my breathing is off, that I'm getting stressed, I travel a ton. Travel is stressful, especially in TSA lines and all the other garbage involved in it, is I try to stop and take two inhales, take one inhale, hold my breath for about 3 to 4 seconds, take another inhale on top of that, wait about 1 second, and let it go. Don't push it out. Don't like that. You just let it fall out to neutral. Then you take another breath in through the nose, hold for about 3 to 4 seconds, breathe in again, hold for 1 second, and let it deflate. Do that about 3 or 4 times. I can even feel that doing that right now. And then go to a coherent breathing pattern, which is about 5 to 6 seconds in, 5 to 6 seconds out. Think of your breath as a circle, right? There is no beginning. There's no end. It's just this beautiful, continuous, cyclical thing that you're doing with your breathing. And I've found that that can really help mellow me out and allow me to think more clearly and not blow up at some ticket agent who's just charged me $400 extra for luggage that wasn't mine. You know, that's our modern day reality. It's not how well you can get through the world. It's how you can navigate all the things that are constantly going wrong by people screwing up everything. And I think the breathing is helpful in that.
Yeah, absolutely. I have found it really powerful too, just to kind of carve out some time in the morning and in the evening. And a recent study, I'm sure you've seen it, came out that I think just 5 minutes of breathing is even more of a stress relaxer or stress reduction tool than even meditation.
which is great for me because I kind of prefer breathing a little bit over meditation.
100% it is. You know, most people who try meditation, the vast majority, more than 90%, fail. They fail because they're going in too deep too soon. Now, meditation is amazing. It is so effective for so many things. The science is very clear on that. But you have to start with something. And I don't know of any meditation that doesn't first start with getting control of your breathing. So everyone can breathe. Everyone can breathe in a conscious pattern. Everyone can follow those directions. And I believe the vast majority of benefits from meditation at the beginning come from breathing. I don't think it has anything to do with mental focus. I think the vast majority come from breathing. Then later on, after about a year of meditating, you can do all kinds of crazy crap with just your mind. But it starts with the breathing. So, which is why I think breathwork's getting so big now. You can think about whatever you want to think about, but the breathing is going to lead you to a place of calm, and it's going to transform how your body is responding to your physical environment. And that's why it's so powerful and popular.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's been a lot of interesting kind of talk about the way that we breathe is actually changing our face shape. So our faces have gotten smaller, our mouths have gotten smaller. Is there truth to this? Can you actually look at someone and say, okay, they breathe through their mouth?
Absolutely. Yeah. And once you learn how to do this, you're never going to look at people the same. It's a problem. I don't think people should learn how to do this because it kind of ruins your time in airports and hotel lobbies. So you can see people who were mouth breathers, very likely, you don't know for sure, maybe they had some accident when they were young, but very likely mouth breathers. You can see people who have had braces. You can see people who have had extractions, who have had headgear. I'm one of those people. I was a mouth breather growing up. I had extractions, headgear, braces, all that crap. So once you see this, you can start to understand why our species has become such a poor breather. Because what happens when your face starts growing backwards, either because you've been a mouth breather for so long, or because you've used different technologies and mechanisms to force your mouth to be smaller, push your jaw back, is you lose space in your airway. And this is one of the reasons why so many of us have trouble breathing. And it's one of the causes to snoring and sleep apnea. This is very controversial what I'm saying, but I've heard this from, I can't tell you how many dentists. And that's why all of the stuff that I went through as a kid, braces and headgear and all that, people will not be doing this in 10 years. I promise you this, because of lawsuits, because people are going to start suing their dentists for ruining their faces and ruining their breathing. And dentists are clued into this, by the way, which is why they're starting to really change their practices.
So what are the dentists doing that's leading to this?
Everything I just mentioned. So if you take a kid who's, I'll put it this way, as a journalist, I don't like to have opinions, and I definitely don't want to be an evangelist for anything. But this is what I kept seeing over and over and over. I looked at the science, I looked at the graphs, I looked at the scans, and it's so obvious to me at this point. If you take a kid who's 13 years old, okay, their head is developing, their face is developing very quickly at this stage, and you take their mouth, their teeth are crooked, right? You take their mouth, remove a bunch of teeth, and you take those remaining teeth and you put braces and headgear on it to scrunch them closer together. That's how you get them straight. And then you continue to put this kid in braces and headgear and all of that. As the rest of their face and head is growing, their mouth is constricted. It was too small to begin with, which is why their teeth are crooked. Now you're making it even smaller relative to the growth of the rest of their face. What's going to happen? Their mouth's going to be very small. Their face is going to start growing backwards. That's going to affect their breathing. And it's going to affect their TMJ. It's going to affect so many other things to do with their bodies. And you can see this all over the planet. I see it every day in the mirror. You know, I see it in most of my friends. And dentists have known this for a long time. We've just been, I won't say swindled, we've been influenced to go the easy way out, which is braces and all of these orthodontic devices straighten teeth. You get straight teeth. Look, my teeth are straight, you know, but at what cost to the rest of the head and at what cost to your airway? That's the question people haven't been asking.
That's really, thank you for breaking it down because it makes a lot of sense. And just seeing so many different either papers or books on this, I feel like I now kind of look at people and I see a certain thing. And also I'm like, oh, I think they might be a mouth breather, which is probably not very good of me, but just kind of naturally happens now.
Yeah. You know, and I'm sure if people looked at me, they'd say the same thing. And it's true. You know, it's just, it's probably not the most polite thing. It'd be one thing if like this were 1% of the population, then you'd be like, oh, well, we shouldn't pick on these people. It's the majority of people out there, you know, it's most of us. And I'm one of them. I'm in that majority of people who suffered from this retronathic growth pattern because of poor breathing, because of poor food, and because of all of these, likely, we don't know for sure, but likely it was influenced by these different orthodontic devices.
Do you think that the way people's teeth are essentially more crooked these days also has something to do with breathing? Or do you think, because I looked at some of the Weston A. Price studies, and people's teeth used to be very straight, much wider head. So maybe because our heads are becoming smaller, it's also affecting the teeth.
Well, we know our mouths are growing smaller. This is not a theory. This is a scientific fact. They're growing smaller because our food has changed. Our food has changed so much. It's so soft and processed now that we don't chew. And if we don't chew, we don't develop the proper skeletature and musculature early on. And our mouth grows small. Why do we have crooked teeth? We have crooked teeth because our mouths are too small. It's not a tooth problem. It's a mouth problem. And we know our mouths are too small. So you can do measurements, and tons of people have done this, and then do measurements of ancient skulls, and they're vastly different. I looked at hundreds and hundreds of skulls from all over the world before the advent of industrialized food. And guess what? They all had perfectly straight teeth, every single one of them. And the curator of this lab told me she had never seen a hunter-gatherer with crooked teeth, ever. So what's gone wrong? We know what's gone wrong. So this is not a medical mystery anymore. It's a fact. It's what you do with it that is now in your power. You can ignore it. That's fine. I don't care what you do with your life. I'm here to provide you with information. You can take this information and use it however you want. But I do not want to lecture anyone. I want to tell you about what I've found. And that's what I hope the book has done, is I've told people what I've discovered.
Absolutely. If you are a mouth breather currently, and you want to, of course, try to fix this after hearing this podcast and probably realizing this, what do you think, what are some tactics that people can use? I've heard of mouth taping at night, which, by the way, I don't think I'm a mouth breather. I've had some people check it out, and I've even recorded myself at night. I did mouth tape starting like 6 years ago. Is that a good tactic? What can people do to start changing this?
So if you want to become a nasal breather, you got to shut your mouth. So that is how you got to do it. Everyone's different. You can't offer a blanket prescription for everyone because some people have serious structural issues in their noses. They have a severely deviated septum. They have large turbinates. They have other issues that inhibit their ability to breathe properly through their noses. Those people need more serious interventions. Some ENTs, some surgeries, some other procedures can really help, right? They even have these different balloons that they can put up in your nose that can open up your nasal passages. So, or maybe it's an allergy thing. Maybe it has nothing to do with the nasal passages. You're just always inflamed up there because you're allergic to dairy or you're allergic to grass. So you have to figure out what the core problem is before you fix it. The majority of people, though, do not have significant structural issues. What they have are poor habits. So you can fix that poor habit by slowly becoming a nasal breather. What I like to do that worked very well for me. I don't know if it's going to work for you or anyone else, but I can just speak to what worked for me is I used a little piece of tape while I was here in my little office in my backyard, and I would put it on my lips and I would answer boring emails and I would do boring work. And I would spend the days training myself to keep my mouth shut, breathing in and out of my nose throughout the day. It wasn't until I really figured that out that I started using it at night. Sleep tape's a big thing now. I get hundreds of letters about this. I do a lot of interviews about it. Not everyone needs sleep tape, okay? So don't listen to the advertising. If you are know that you're a nasal breather at night, you don't need sleep tape, so don't use it. About 65% of us or more are breathing through our mouths. Those are the people that could benefit from sleep tape. Maybe you won't benefit. From what I've seen, almost everyone benefits, and some people's sleep are absolutely transformed. You only know if you try it.
Do you have any specific brands? Because I know people will ask this. What kind of sleep tape?
Oh, yeah. I get this stuff in the P.O. box about every week. New brands, new names, new technologies. I don't care what you use. Try out everything. See what works well for you. I can give you some general pointers, okay? When you're looking at sleep tape, my favorite thing to talk about. For some reason, everybody wants to know about sleep tape. So here it is. Here are my pointers. You want this tape to be able to come right off, okay? There should be no resistance. If you want to, if you open your mouth, it just, your mouth pops open, comes right off. When you remove it, this is so important, use your tongue. Do not use your hands. When you remove it, just do your tongue back and forth till it comes off. Too many people do this. After a couple of days, their lips are chapped. They're never going to use it again. I like micropore tape. Micropore tape is meant to be put on skin and meant to be taken off. That's the stuff I use. That's the stuff a lot of people use. There are now dozens and dozens of brands. I've tried them. I guess they work if you want to spend a lot of extra money on some branding. I'm not going to shame them. I'm happy they're helping people out. Me personally, I found just the cheap stuff at Walgreens works really well. And that's the stuff that I travel with. That's the stuff I have a really hard time sleeping if I don't have sleep tape on. And I've tried it over and over again. Even camping, I bring sleep tape.
Wow. How long did it take you to, of wearing the tape during the day in your office, how long did it take to kind of build that habit to just naturally breathe through your nose?
For me, it was a couple of months. And then I really had it down. Now I know I'm not breathing through my mouth ever. I walk my dog, I jog, I work out, I surf, even surfing, I'm breathing through my nose. Unless right before, you know, you wipe out, you want to take a huge breath of air. That's cool because you're using that as a tool. You're using that mouth breath as a gear shift into this other state. And that's fine. Just like some breath work as you breathe through the mouth. That's awesome. You're doing it on purpose. So for me, it was a couple of months. I thought that after a couple of months of using tape at night, I wouldn't need it. I thought I would habitually shut my mouth at night and sleep with a closed mouth. 100% wrong for me. Every time I put my head on a pillow, doesn't even matter if I'm napping, my mouth goes open. So that's why I use tape.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, I tried it. I think it was beneficial, but then I kind of recorded myself. I didn't feel like I was sleeping with my mouth open, and then I confirmed it. But I think if you are, then this can definitely be a good tool. What about CO2? So obviously we have oxygen, but then CO2 is also an important part of this equation. I've read up on some breathwork tactics that actually want, you know, basically breathing out and holding and allowing the CO2 to build up. Is there any benefit to that? What are your thoughts on that?
Tremendous benefit to breath holding and allowing your CO2 to build up consciously. So if you're doing this unconsciously throughout the day, it's a disaster. But doing this consciously, these breathwork practices date back thousands and thousands of years. Ancient Chinese did it. The ancient Hindus did it. Native Americans did it. Breath holding is a fundamental part of pranayama. That's what pranayama means, the practice of holding your breath. So when we hold our breath, we can build more blood, more red blood cells through EPO. We can stimulate more human growth hormone. We can stimulate more stem cell growth. That hasn't been super verified, but there are some studies suggesting that. And we can shift ourselves into this parasympathetic state, which is why if you've ever done vigorous pranayamas where you breathe really fast and then you hold your breath, you feel just the circulation coursing through your body because you're shrinking your blood vessels when you're hyperventilating. Then you hold your breath and you open them up. So you're just working out all of your blood vessels throughout your body and getting blood just coursing everywhere around. And those are just some of the benefits to breath holding. There are many others, but it actually causes this change in your hormones. It allows you to take control of your breathing and elicit all of these transformations in your body, from blood flow to heart rate, stress levels, different levels of consciousness. If you've held your breath for 4 or 5 minutes, you start entering into this very cosmic state. It's wonderful stuff.
Do you have any sort of protocol if someone's just starting, maybe once a week, once a day? Can you do it? I'm assuming you can do it too much.
Yeah, just like anything, you can do it too much. The ancient Chinese suggested you would do these breath holds about 3 times a day, these practices 3 times a day. Some Wim Hof practitioners do Wim Hof breathing, even though that's an ancient breathing method that he has stamped on it. Good for him. He's an amazing dude, deserves it. But they do it 2x a day. For people with asthma and panic, it's most beneficial to do mini breath holds throughout the day, up to 500 mini breath holds throughout the day to build up that CO2. And that's been shown to be very effective in reducing symptoms of asthma, panic, and more.
How long is a mini breath hold?
What you do, I'll lead you through a little something. You see how long you can hold your breath comfortably before the first involuntary reaction happens. What I mean by involuntary reaction is your throat will tense up, your abdomen will shake a little bit. So right now, if we were to just inhale and exhale, then we're going to inhale again. Exhale to neutral. Don't push all the air out. Just exhale to neutral. Hold your breath. And let's say you can hold your breath comfortably without feeling anything twitch in your body for about 40 seconds. You want to be at 40 or above. If you're not, that's okay, because you can work on this. And within a few weeks, chances are you'll be there. But if you have that breath hold, that controlled pause of about 40, you want to cut that in half, 20 seconds. That's your mini breath hold time. And you want to hold your breath then throughout the day in that same way. Inhale, exhale to neutral, hold your breath for 20 seconds and do this throughout the day. It's not going to be very pleasant the first couple of days as your body is detoxing, as it's getting used to that accumulation of very beneficial CO2. But if you stick with it, studies for the past several decades have confirmed this can be so beneficial, not just for asthma, not just for panic, but for athletic performance, for stress, and for more.
I love that. I need to work on mine because typically mine is around like 35 seconds or so. Mm-hmm. I used to do it more religiously. I would do it a couple times a week, even sometimes a couple times a day. But, you know, there's so many practices that we can incorporate. I should definitely get back to it because I do think there are a lot of benefits. That's kind of correlated to my next question. So you've interviewed all of these free divers. I'm just fascinated by free divers. What's the average amount of time that they hold their breath?
It depends. It depends if you're talking about world champions. It depends if you're talking about a hobbyist. So I've found with spearfishers, with casual free divers, holding your breath on the surface, right, not in the water, is different than holding your breath in the water. The deeper you dive, the harder it can get because you're exerting more energy. And if you're exerting more energy, you're using more oxygen. So on land, I think a good amount of time for free divers is 3.5-4 minutes. You should, if you really want to do some deeper dives, you should be able to hold your breath about 3.5 minutes on land, which isn't even that hard. With just a little bit of training, anyone in decent health can hold their breath for that long. We were just running a retreat, and these people could hold their breath for about 20 seconds at the beginning. At the end of the week, they were rocking 3.5 minutes. We're talking people from 75 years old to 17. Wow. So everyone has this, most people have this ability. If you're talking about breath holding in water, it completely depends. If you're doing shallow dives down to 20 feet, 30 feet, you can hold your breath longer, at least I can, than if I'm doing these very deep, deep, deep dives. Other people have different experience. They can hold the breath longer on these deep dives, but I don't want to feel like I'm running out of breath when I'm 60 feet down. You know, I want to feel very comfortable. I want to feel like I have plenty of oxygen. And so, like with all things, people get in trouble when they push it too hard in free diving. To me, this is a nurturing, it's an underwater meditation, it's a yogic practice. Listen to the ocean, listen to your body, you're going to be fine. It's my favorite thing to do in the whole world. I just absolutely love it.
That's amazing. So within a week, you think, not recommending anyone just start free diving without supervision, but no, within even a week, you can really... So your lungs, are they actually expanding in size and capacity, or what's happening there?
So a week under proper training, never free dive alone, children and adults, never do this. Don't go in a pool and hold your breath unless you want to die. That is an idiotic thing. Don't hyperventilate and then go in a pool and see how long you can hold your breath. Don't ever hyperventilate free diving. Never, ever do this. You always dive with people. You have backup systems. You have safety systems and all of that. After this public service announcement, I'll now answer your question. But no, it's so frustrating. I mean, because free diving gets this bad rap of being the world's most dangerous activity. Bullshit. It can be a completely safe and nurturing activity if you listen to yourself and if you pay attention to what's around you. So with proper training, with someone who really knows what he or she is doing that can coach you, I'm convinced that anyone in decent health can get up to past 3 minutes, probably within a couple of days. That's usually what happens. And no, your lungs aren't changing, but your tolerance for CO2 is changing. Freediving is a mental game. It's less of physical. Our bodies are designed to do this. Our minds, living in this modern world, are not. So you have to convince yourself to understand that your body is a miraculous organism that can put you into so many amazing situations if you listen to it and if you train it. So proper training, yeah, you can see people go blow past 4 minutes within a couple of days. After a week, you can really see some differences.
Wow, that's incredible. Has there been any studies or in your research, have you seen like the biological effects of being able to hold your breath for this long and allow CO2 to accumulate? I'm sure there's a ton of health benefits in these people.
Well, yeah, that's why it's used for panic. That's why it's used for asthma. It's why it's used for people with stress disorders, with autoimmune diseases. That's why free divers are so chill. You can't free dive if you're stressed out. Doesn't work. You can't force yourself to free dive. You have to let go, and you have to be in a mental state that your body and your mind is allowing you to let go and give in to this, to the ocean, to the depths. So there are innumerable benefits. I mentioned some of those just tied to breath holding and how you can stimulate red blood cells, hormones, you know, decrease stress and more. But I also think it ties into mental health, which is why a lot of people with addiction problems discover free diving and it really changed, helped transform them. So I think that we're just beginning to understand what it can really do for you on a physical level, on a mental level, on a spiritual level, and more.
We've talked a lot about breathing to calm our minds or relax us a little bit. But what about breathing for energizing the mind? Do you do a lot of that in terms of your practice?
I'm doing it right now. Yeah. So if you can breathe very slowly to calm yourself down, to lower your heart rate, you can also breathe very rapidly to jack yourself up, to stress yourself out. And the stress we're talking about, this isn't the damaging chronic stress that is the culprit behind the vast majority of modern diseases, from cancer to diabetes and more. This is these forced, short stabs of stress, just like cold therapy, right? You can really do damage to your body if you're sitting in a cold bath for an hour, right? But for 2 minutes, it's great. So breathing, you can do it for much longer than that. You can breathe very intensely for up to an hour, but you're not going to breathe this way every single day. You're not going to breathe this way for longer than that. So these very intense pranayamas or kriyas or qigong exercises or tummo exercises, these are designed to stress the body out. And it's that hormetic stress, this hormesis that the body wants. It sort of wakes it up and allows it to function better when you've stopped stressing it out. It also allows you to control the little stress switch that we all have inside of us. We learn how to turn it on. And if we learn how to turn it on, we then know how to turn it off. That's why those vigorous exercises, which I absolutely love, are an essential part of breath work. They're not the only ones that are beneficial. You don't always have to do vigorous exercises to get benefits. But for people who want to push it a little more, they're wonderful.
Absolutely. I think it's great. I sometimes do that before a workout, especially if I'm doing an evening workout. Actually, cold therapy and then a little bit of like quick breathing is an amazing combination to have an incredible workout in the afternoon or early evening.
Yeah, it's really the becoming the peanut butter and chocolate of athletic performance, mental health. You know, they're such good complements to one another. You don't have to do both of them to get benefits, but they're kind of better together.
Yes, I completely agree. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure having you here with us today. I think everyone's probably been focused on their breath the whole time, like I have been, but I really appreciate your time.
Thanks a lot for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Hacking was created and is hosted by Kayla Barnes. This podcast is for informational purposes only, and views expressed on this podcast are not medical advice. This podcast, including Kayla Barnes, does not accept responsibility for any possible adverse effects from the use of the information contained herein. Opinions of their guests are their own, and this podcast does not endorse or accept responsibility for statements made by guests. This podcast does not make any representations or warranties about guest qualifications or credibility. Individuals on this podcast may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to herein. If you think you have a medical issue, consult a licensed physician.